It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
If you're sick of the heat in search of some rain, there is some change ahead. Good afternoon. Welcome to the broadcast. Yeah, you'll be happy to learn cooler, wetter weather lies ahead. Meteorologist Kevin Williams says starting tomorrow, things will be changing big time. His forecast is coming up, but first up at noon today, nothing to see here. That's what President Trump says about a New York Times article about his tax returns. The issue's become fodder for the mainstream media with just 35 days to go before Election Day. The Times says for 11 years running, Mr. Trump paid no federal income taxes whatsoever, not a dime. The president calls it
fake news. The New York Times, they want to create a little bit of a story, they're doing anything they can.
The Times says the president avoided paying taxes in 10 of the past 15 years. NBC's business analyst Stephanie Rule.
The question will be, did he just work the system or did he provide information outside the system that's potentially fraudulent?
It remains to be seen whether Trump's taxes will come up at tomorrow night's first of three presidential debates. Moderator Chris Wallace says he's settled on six topics to discuss. The Trump-Biden records, coronavirus, the economy, race relations, the integrity of the upcoming election, and the Supreme Court. Analyst Ed O'Keefe has more on how the candidates are prepping themselves for this debate, starting with the incumbent, President Trump.
He and his team are using a mix of flashcards and old video of Joe Biden to get ready. Meanwhile, Biden has been doing some in-person and virtual prep with longtime advisors and top campaign officials. They're reviewing the president's almost daily tweets attacking Biden, his record, and his family to get a sense of what they think Mr. Trump will focus on.
More on the debate and its schematics from correspondent Mike Bauer.
The two sides have decided to forego the traditional pre-debate handshake in light of the virus. They also won't do an elbow bump. Neither Trump nor Biden nor Chris Wallace, the moderator, will wear masks, and there will be a limited audience of only 75 to 80 people.
That 90-minute debate starts at 9 p.m. tomorrow in Cleveland, Ohio. Should be quite the debate. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham says confirmation hearings for Supreme Court pick Amy Coney Barrett, they will start Monday, October 12th. That's 2 weeks from today. The full Senate could get the nomination by October 22nd.
If all goes well, then certainly a vote on the floor sometime before the election.
That's White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Democrats vow to throw up as many roadblocks as they can to block the nomination. Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin.
We can slow it down, perhaps a matter of hours, maybe days at the most, but we can't stop the outcome.
If confirmed, 48-year-old Amy Coney Barrett would be the youngest member of the Supreme Court. She'd also be the first justice ever to have school-aged children. Coney Barrett has seven children, including two that she adopted from Haiti. The high-stakes drama at the high court is now a motivating factor for voters in two key battleground states. Pollster Anthony Salvanto.
A majority of voters in both these states feel like it's made the election even more important.
Those states are North Carolina and Georgia, and it is razor tight in both states. Trump has the slight edge in Georgia. Biden leads in North Carolina. Recently demoted Trump campaign manager Brad Parscale has been hospitalized in Florida. Fort Lauderdale police say his wife called them for help because he barricaded himself in his home with several weapons and threatened himself harm. Parscale is still with the Trump campaign, but in a lesser role. He was demoted after a recent Tulsa rally was overhyped. Strong winds fanning the flames of yet another wildfire in Northern California. This one is decimating the world-famous wine country.
The glass fire more than doubled in size as the sun went down Sunday, bearing down on the town of Deer Park.
You could see the flames, and it was just really scary because it was just like a line of flames.
The area is home to some of Northern California's biggest wineries, which has seen multiple fires in recent years.
It almost seems like year after year after year.
It is becoming more of a norm, but this is the closest it's ever been for us.
High winds fueled the flames throughout the day, destroying decades-old wineries.
Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti. About half the country is reporting rising numbers in coronavirus cases. Here's reporter Sam Brock.
Despite the ongoing push to contain COVID, there are alarming new warning signs the country is headed in the wrong direction. In the last 2 weeks, 25 states have seen a bump in new infections, with Wyoming, Utah, and Wisconsin experiencing a spike of 100% or more.
About 760 Americans are still dying every day from the virus, and at that rate, experts say we could surpass the 300,000 mark by December. Our report today is linking this pandemic to suicides in the military.
The military says not all the information is in, but it's clear the pandemic seems to be playing a part in the rise in suicides. There's been a 30% jump in active duty suicides in the Army, and officials say that could lead to a possible shortening of combat deployments. They had been stretched from 10 to 11 months because of quarantine rules. The Air Force Chief of Staff, General Charles Brown, has said publicly COVID has added to stress for people in uniform.
Steve Capon in Washington, a federal judge has stopped the Trump administration order that would have banned the popular video sharing service TikTok from smartphone app stores. The president had voiced security concerns. Robert Chang with CNET says the Chinese parent company of TikTok made a strong argument before that judge.
ByteDance has argued that the U.S. data isn't stored in servers in China and isn't at risk. And has also made the argument that the takedown of TikTok would infringe on the rights of U.S. citizens to broadcast their views.
Robert Chang with CNET. Still to come on the Noon Report for a Monday, Bills win late. Ridge endorses Biden and elk season in Pennsylvania. But first, work week weather. Here's Kevin.
Good afternoon. We're coming to the end of the line for the warm days. Cooler and wetter conditions are ahead. Your complete forecast is coming up. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
All right. Could use the rain. Thank you, Kevin. Let's check the headlines from New York and Pennsylvania. New York's public universities, already hit hard by COVID-19, are bracing for yet another big setback, as we hear from Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
Yeah, the universities now face a 25% cut in state operating aid. That's on top of big revenue losses they've already sustained because of COVID-19's impact on enrollment and other costs. A SUNY spokesperson said without additional emergency federal aid, the system faces a projected revenue deficit of $800 million to $1 billion because of the impact of COVID-19. Private colleges and universities have warned they will also hemorrhage students if the state scales back tuition aid for low and moderate income students. Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
All right, Jeremy, thank you for that. And at a time when college sticker prices are going through the roof, a school in Western New York is cutting its tuition to its lowest level in 20 years. Houghton College, a Christian liberal arts school in northern Allegheny County, has announced it will reset tuition for the 2021 academic year. Starting next fall, Houghton's tuition rate will be just under $16,000 before financial aid is factored in. This new pricing model represents a 53% decrease in tuition at Houghton from last year. COVID-19 flare-ups have forced more schools in New York and Pennsylvania to go to remote learning only. Elmira College just announcing it's going remote for 2 weeks. Alfred Ullman Central announcing today it's closed to coronavirus, and there are plenty more. Family Life's Tracy Lynn continues our coverage.
An elementary school in Niagara Falls, New York, has just announced it's switching to virtual education indefinitely. Fayetteville Manlius in Central New York is doing the same. Meanwhile, Lyon Central in Wayne County has made the move to digital instruction until Tuesday, October 13th. In the Northern Tier, starting tomorrow, it's all internet-based education for students in Troy, Pennsylvania. The district is also suspending all extracurricular activities, including athletics. Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
All right, Tracy, thank you for that. Tom Ridge, the former Republican governor of Pennsylvania, will be voting for Democrat Joe Biden in November. He announced it, and the endorsement, that is, in an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Ridge, who served as the nation's first Secretary of Homeland Security under George W. Bush, said that this would be his first time casting a ballot for a Democrat. Ridge is the third former Republican governor from a swing state to endorse Biden. He joins John Kasich from Ohio and Rick Snyder from Michigan. Pennsylvania's current governor is Tom Wolf, and he is asking President Trump stop holding rallies in the Keystone State. That story from Family Life's Brandon Dixon.
Governor Wolf says the Commander-in-Chief's campaign events in the Commonwealth put Pennsylvania communities at risk due to the lack of social distancing and infrequent mask wearing. Mr. Trump made his fifth visit this month to the battleground state this past Saturday. Governor Wolf says two of the president's previous Pennsylvania rallies violated the state's public health guidelines. He calls the gatherings, quote, dangerous and disappointing. A Trump campaign spokesman says everyone attending the president's rallies gets a temperature check and are provided a mask. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Thank you, Brandon. Governor Wolf also launching a substance abuse disorder campaign today. Its aim is to reduce the stigma, or eliminate the stigma, I should say, surrounding the opioid epidemic. 65% of all drug overdoses in Pennsylvania involve opioids. Governor Wolf says that stigma is preventing drug addicts from getting the help they so desperately need. Southern Tier Assemblyman Phil Palmisano of Corning is calling for an independent investigation into nursing home deaths caused by COVID-19 in New York State.
The data right now, they say 6,000. We know, according to AP reports, it's probably a lot more than that, probably 12,000 or double that. We need to get to the bottom of this.
Palmisano thinks the governor is hiding important information from the public. He wants answers into that March directive from Cuomo that forced COVID patients into nursing homes. That directive was not overturned until May.
For him to say that his order didn't lead to number of deaths we had in our nursing homes is very disingenuous, and it's just him trying to cover himself, and it's not going to fly. It doesn't fly with the New Yorkers, and it doesn't fly with American people. It certainly doesn't fly with me.
Palmisano says new nursing home visitation rules are also problematic because insurance companies many times are not covering the cost of a COVID-19 test, and those tests are required for families to be reunited with their loved ones at nursing homes in New York. A local sheriff is stepping down. Barry Virts has led the Wayne County, New York Sheriff's Department for nearly 12 years. He will not seek a fourth term next year. A candlelight vigil was held last night in Canastota, New York, for a 19-year-old pregnant mom whose body was recovered after a four-day search. The remains of Elizabeth Garrow McDonald found yesterday. She was last seen last Wednesday.
It hasn't really hit me yet. I don't want it to because I just keep thinking I'm going to wake up and I'm gonna be able to have dinner with her, and it's gonna be a good day. And it's so hard.
The victim's sister, Melissa Bush, tells Spectrum News she is not ready to accept life without her sister. Bush says for people involved in abusive relationships, get out now.
Seek help before it gets to this point. Don't continue to stick in it. I'm telling you, it's not going to end good.
Melissa Bush says her sister's spirit was contagious, and the entire community of Canastota is in grief over that loss.
She'll be missed, and heaven's going to really be happy to have her. So lucky up there.
12 different police agencies from four central New York counties came together to help find the body of that 19-year-old who leaves behind a one-year-old daughter. This is the time of year when you need to be on the lookout for deer. They seem to be everywhere this time of year, and sadly, one hit a man on a motorcycle yesterday in Palmyra, New York. Cops say 31-year-old Gerald Stanley of Newark was killed in that collision. It happened before sunrise. Sunrise and sunset is when deer tend to be most active. While some come to Pennsylvania to view the fall foliage this time of year, thousands more come to see the elk, especially in the northern tier. The story from Family Life's Terry Diener.
Game Commission officials report it's the peak of the mating season for the elk herd, which occurs from mid-September to early October. Currently, about 1,000 elk inhabit Pennsylvania's Elk Range, which comprises parts of Elk, McCain, Cameron, Clinton, Potter, Clearfield, and Center counties north of Interstate 80. Visitors will hear bugles, grunts, and the clash of antlers as the bull elk fight for the females. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Quite a sight it is. Thank you, Terry. The two-minute drill next, a Monday edition. Here's Sonny Delphia.
Yeah, let's start in Orchard Park, where the Bills were leading the Rams by 25 points. Rams rallied to take the lead, then with 15 seconds left.
Touchdown, Buffalo, Tyler Croft! The Bills have the lead with 15 seconds left.
Bills win 35-32. Josh Allen.
Bounded back. Proud of our guys. We'll celebrate this one tonight and be focused on the Raiders tomorrow.
Buffalo 3-0 on the year. The Steelers are 3-0 after James Conner ran for 109 yards and the go-ahead touchdown. Steelers rallied to beat the Texans 28-21. James.
We're a four-quarter team. And our defense allowed us to get back.
In Cleveland, Nick Chubb ran for 108 yards and two touchdowns. The Browns beat the Washington football team 34-20. Good to have players back, says Brown head coach Kevin Stefanski.
Hopefully we'll get a few more here as we get going. But
Cleveland 2-1 on the year. Carson Wentz and the Eagles.
Lunges end zone for the touchdown. What a run by Wentz. Run it in from 7 yards out.
That late score would force overtime, but that's where it would end. The Eagles and Bengals end in a 23-23 tie. In East Rutherford, Nick Mullins threw for 343 yards and a touchdown. In place of the injured Jimmy Garoppolo, the Niners crushed the Giants 36-9. The G-men 0-3. Whose fault is it, Joe Judge?
Offensively, our job is to execute. Defensively, we don't choose when we go on the field. Our job is to respond whenever we're put on the field, whatever situation.
The Jets fall to 0-3 after Sam Darnold threw three interceptions, two for touchdowns. Colts beat them 36-7. Sam?
I just got to play consistent. I mean, I'm not playing consistent enough to play well in this league.
To the NBA, either the Miami Heat or LeBron James will win their fourth Larry O'Brien trophy. That's the NBA trophy. After the Heat knocked off the Celtics 125-113, Game 6 of the East Finals, Miami and LeBron and the Lakers battle starting on Wednesday. Major League Baseball playoff matchups are set. The best of three wildcard rounds start tomorrow in the American League. Yankees at the Indians, Astros at the Twins, Blue Jays at the Rays, White Sox at the A's. National League wildcard series starts on Wednesday. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphia.
All right, Sonny, thank you very much. Still to come on the Noon Report, debate night preview will take you to Cleveland. Vote from space and Joe Montana to the rescue.
Yet another breathless announcement that there may be life somewhere in the universe tells us more about the state of science than the state of life on other planets. The Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. Hope for E.T. springs eternal, despite the definitive lack of evidence for his existence. After decades of peering through telescopes, listening with giant radio antenna, and hurling probes to distant worlds, astronomers have yet to find even a hint of life beyond Earth. So, instead of looking for actual evidence of life, some scientists have begun looking for conditions that could theoretically be associated with life. And when they find that, they hold press conferences. When scientists discovered liquid water might have once existed on Mars, it was reported with the excitement you'd expect if probes had found Martian guppies. The discovery of a probable ocean under the ice of a Jovian moon is reported as if alien life forms have been filmed doing backstrokes in there. Well, the latest episode of this astrobiological hype involved our nearest planetary neighbor. Venus has long been dismissed in the search for extraterrestrial life due to its hellish climate. Its surface temperature is so hot it can melt lead. But then, just a few weeks ago, an international team of scientists from MIT and Cardiff University published evidence of phosphine gas high in the atmosphere of Venus. On Earth, the only two known sources of phosphine are human industry and microscopic life. So, according to this team, the presence of large quantities of phosphine gas on Venus could only be explained by living things. While the press's reaction was predictable, every headline featured the word life. Clamor to divert space exploration resources to Venus mounted so quickly that NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine had to issue a statement in which, while praising the insight of the astronomers, he downplayed Venus, pointing instead to other more promising missions already on the space agency's docket and in their budget. Other critics were more measured about the whole thing. This can hardly be taken as a biosignature, one biologist said to the New York Times, only for anomalous and unexplained chemistry. another professor of planetary sciences that was quoted in the Financial Times, sounded even more skeptical. The scientists can't think of a way of getting this phosphine levels without it being a byproduct of life, he said. That doesn't mean there isn't another way, and it's a long way from proving that there's life on Venus. So many of the fanfare of stories like this follow a very familiar script. Scientists rush through a peer review process and then go straight to the press with speculative conclusions. Along the way, things like anomalous chemistry become alien life. And later, once cooler heads prevail, the same newspapers and websites print a retraction with a little less exciting explanation. Now, of course, proposing and challenging theories is not bad. It's what science is actually all about. Where science goes wrong is when it treats findings, especially in these early speculative stages, as if anything at all is settled, much less announcing those speculations as settled conclusions with breathless news reports and demands that NASA rework their budget. In one of our latest What Would You Say videos, my colleague Brooke McIntyre takes on this whole myth of settled science. The very process of proposing and overturning theories is an ongoing part of the scientific process. Even long-standing scientific consensus is vulnerable to new and contrary evidence, and scientists themselves are fallible and biased human beings. Look, it's a great video, especially one you can share and discuss with your kids and grandkids. To watch it, just go to whatwouldyousay.org. And none of this means, of course, that life on Venus is impossible. It just means that a pair of papers that links the presence of a particular gas to life doesn't amount to all the hype that it generates. Without more and better evidence, speculation about those little ETs on Venus is just like its sweltering atmosphere. Too much hot air. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street.
20 past the hour, Kevin Williams, weather next.
Here is your family life weather forecast. For this afternoon, just a stray shower. Otherwise, clouds, some sun, and warm. High temperatures within a few degrees of 80. For tonight, tomorrow, cloudy. Showers will become more numerous from west to east, and there could be a rumble of thunder. The low temperatures tonight near 60, and then 60s and low 70s tomorrow. Some pretty hefty rain is likely tomorrow and tomorrow night across parts of central New York, central and northeastern Pennsylvania. Showers taper Wednesday, breaks of sunshine, and on the cooler side with high temperatures mostly in the 60s.
All right, need the rain. Have I said that yet? Thank you very much, Kevin Williams. This is the Noon Report. I'm Bob Price. Hey, thanks for being with us today. A lot going on this Monday afternoon, the 28th of September. President Trump and Joe Biden busy prepping for tomorrow night's first of three presidential debates in Cleveland, 9 p.m. start time. Political pundit Karl Rove thinks Biden has a lot more on the line tomorrow because he's been so low profile.
We don't have the normal campaign, and as a result, we've not been conditioned by 7 months of activity since he became the Democratic nominee to have a good sense of who he is and come to the conclusion that he's up to the job. So it raises the stakes tomorrow night. We don't know as much about him as we know about President Trump, who's dominated the media for the last 3.5 years, for good or for ill. But if there are big slip-ups, it could be very problematic.
Chris Wallace of Fox News will moderate the debate, and his focus will be on six topics: the Trump-Biden records, coronavirus, the economy, race relations, the integrity of the election, and the U.S. Supreme Court. Speaking of which, Senate confirmation hearings for the nominee to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they will begin in 2 weeks. Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham is confident that Judge Amy Coney Barrett will be confirmed, and she will be confirmed before Election Day. Michigan Democrat Debbie Stabenow.
She will be the vote that takes away health care for millions of Americans.
Republican John Kennedy.
I consider Debbie a friend, so I say this gently. Sell crazy somewhere else. We're all stocked up here.
Joe Biden predicts if Amy Coney Barrett is confirmed, the high court will likely deal the final death blow to Obamacare. Democrats will try to derail her nomination, but they lack the votes to stop it. President Trump dismissing it as fake news. A report by the New York Times that says he hasn't paid a dime in federal income taxes in 10 of the past 15 years.
President Trump denied a New York Times report that claims he only paid $750 in income tax in 2016 and 2017.
We went through the same stories. You could have asked me the same questions 4 years ago. I had to litigate this and talk about it. Totally fake news.
But when asked directly how much he did pay, Mr. Trump continued to tease the eventual release of his long-sought tax returns.
I look forward to releasing that I look forward to releasing many things. I'm going to release many things, and people will be really shocked.
The New York Times obtained tax return data extending over more than two decades and found Mr. Trump paid lower taxes using questionable tactics, including a $72.9 million refund that is currently being audited by the IRS.
Correspondent Paula Reed with that report. Heroics on the football field made Joe Montana a household name. Now the Hall of Fame quarterback's being credited with intercepting a kidnapping in his home. He made a play over the weekend that may have saved the life of his nine-month-old grandchild.
Another win for the comeback kid.
All I can say really is bravo, Joe, because what a guy to be able to pull that off.
It happened Saturday when a female intruder entered Montana's Malibu home and grabbed his sleeping grandchild from her playpen. Montana's wife, Jennifer, managed to grab the child back from the woman who fled to a nearby home. Montana flagged down a passing cruiser, and she was arrested. This neighbor was watching.
The next thing I saw, there was a lady being brought out with police officers, and she was handcuffed.
The suspect's being held on suspicion of kidnapping and burglary. Montana's grandchild was unharmed.
Wow, what a story. Correspondent Vicky Barker, a conservation group warning that while a coronavirus vaccine may save lives, it will kill sharks. A lot of sharks. Pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline says it's planning on creating a billion doses of a vaccine made from the oil of a shark's liver. Half a million sharks will have to be killed in the process of creating the COVID vaccine. Experts say people are losing their hair due to COVID. Wendy Wild has this report.
Dermatologists at the Cleveland Clinic say they're seeing a notable increase in people complaining about hair loss. One doctor tells the New York Times hair loss is a temporary condition that happens when a body is stressed, and she's seeing about 20 cases a week, compared with none before the coronavirus pandemic. It's not just people whose bodies are stressed while they're sick with COVID. It's also people who are stressed out during the pandemic.
Wendy Wild with that report. 25 past the hour. This is the Noon Report on Family Life.
Welcome to the next edition of Homeschool Roundtable on Family Life. I'm Sarah Harnish, and today we jump back into the final conversation with New York State LEIA President Jen Snyder. Here's the question we begin with. What if I don't want to homeschool?
Homeschool? I would have never thought I'd do it in a million years. And I really just feel like God backed me into a corner. We looked for other options for school, and none of them were viable. So we said, all right, we're going to try this thing. I didn't know a single family who homeschooled. I didn't have a group that I went to find out ahead of time. What do you do? What does your day look like? I just jumped into it and then got connected with my community, which I think is probably one of the biggest pieces of information that I give to people is don't try and go it alone. Even if you're working and I know you're busy and you don't have extra time for stuff, find a couple of homeschool families. Pick their brains. Get support from them. You know, there's going to be bad days. How do you get through them? What are the common pitfalls? How can you avoid them? I think it's important to learn those things from current homeschoolers. Now here I am going into my 17th year, and I had two more girls after those early years, and we started homeschooling right from the beginning, and I just wish I had done it all along. The family relationships that were created, the sibling relationships that developed over the years, the flexibility that we had to travel when we wanted to, read a book about something, and then just go see it, not held down to anybody else's timeline or vacation times or anything like that. For mom, too, you don't realize I had a good education. I was college educated, but there still were a lot of things that I was not exposed to. I've been learning things alongside my kid, and I think a lot of parents enjoy that process, too. We're always discovering things.
This is a really big deal, and a lot of parents are just sitting there saying, okay, now what do I do? So I do want to challenge you to go to the LEIA website.
Yeah, LEIA.org. You might also see us called Homeschool New York in different places. We've been kind of transitioning to a name that speaks more clearly as to who we are and what we do. A particularly helpful resource for New Yorkers is our downloadable regulatory manual. It's free. It has all the regulations spelled out, showing you samples of the paperwork and things to consider when you're interacting with your school districts. We are on Facebook. We have been doing Facebook Live every week on Thursday nights, bringing various issues to help people, things from how to pick curriculum to how to maneuver through co-op, special needs students too. So it's all there at homeschoolnewyork.com/LEIA on Facebook as well. There certainly are a lot of people out there that are not homeschooling because God called them to it. But the way I look at it is that we still have an obligation to help them do this right. And if I learned anything after last year is that how many of them now just say, oh, wow, I love this. They end up doing it for the right reason, and I feel like I'm an example of that. I came into it kicking and screaming. I wasn't looking to homeschool. And I literally, God backed me into a corner. I joke with people. I'm like, oh, everybody always says when God closes a door, he opens the window. And I say, no. Sometimes he slams that door shut and tells you, you got to live in there. So
drop some rocks on your head. And
Yeah. My husband would be like, why don't we try this? And I'd be like, no, I'm not organized enough. I can't do it. I don't have enough time. And he's like, this is where your time would be. We'd sit at dinner every night. He'd be like, you were at school today? And I'd say, yeah. He goes, what'd you do? I'm like, oh, I cooked hot lunch. How long were you there? 3 hours. He wrote three on the calendar. And we did that book fair, field trip, whatever it was. And he's like, see all that time? That's the time you'll be home.
And sometimes our husbands are the biggest cheerleaders as well. John saw homeschooling probably a good 6 months before I did and kept saying, come on, Sarah. Wow. My big argument is I would eat my young if I was home with them all the time.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I need to get out.
Yeah.
And I still find that that's the case. When I'm anchoring and then I come home, I have a gentleness toward them that I don't have when I just wake up and I'm just feisty.
Yeah.
So I think for some women, getting out even a couple hours a day can be a huge blessing.
Yeah, and I think that's why getting together with other families helps, because you really should not just be home all day in your four walls.
Can you speak to the opposite side of that, too? Because I think one of the things that I felt was a little bitterness when I first started, which was just all my free time's gone. Now they're not gone. Now I have to do this all day long, and I got to be a babysitter and a teacher, and I don't know that I like this. And for me, it was like psychological, the beginning of processing what my new title was.
Right. And I think we actually just covered this in our thing last week. We talked about avoiding common pitfalls and avoiding burnout. And the idea that mom tends to be the one who kind of has to do everything. And in a homeschool environment, when you start thinking about life being learning, all of it, you have to get your kids to do more. And I think that lightens the load and lightens the burden. Chores, taking care of little ones. I was pregnant our first year homeschooling. So when my daughter came along, the boys were like, oh, we're going to be her preschool teachers. And I'm like, fine, yeah, go ahead. You know, taking advantage of those types, and that's a learning activity for them too. So being able, I think, to pass off those burdens is important. The whole family's in it together.
Homeschooling expert Jen Snyder speaking with our own Sarah Harnish. You can get that complete interview, by the way, at fln.org/podcast. Just click on the news icon.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. Well, a shift in the weather pattern is ahead this week, and the result will be a cloudier, cooler, and wetter weather pattern, one that will generate some drought-denting, if not drought-busting rains for parts of the Northeast. Now, for this afternoon, just a stray shower. Otherwise, clouds, some sun, and warm. High temperatures within a few degrees of 80. But tonight, tomorrow, cloudy. Showers will become more numerous from west to east. And there could be a rumble of thunder. The low temperatures tonight near 60, and then 60s and low 70s tomorrow. Some pretty hefty rain is likely tomorrow and tomorrow night across parts of central New York, central and northeastern Pennsylvania. Showers taper Wednesday, breaks of sunshine, and on the cooler side with high temperatures mostly in the 60s.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much. Finally at noon, most U.S. astronauts live in Houston, which makes sense if you think about it. But did you know there's a Texas law that allows them to vote from space, if they so desire, using a secure electronic ballot? And would you know, an astronaut is doing just that this year. Kate Rubens tells the Associated Press she plans to cast her vote more than 200 miles above Earth. In mid-October, she will launch, along with two Russian cosmonauts, for a six-month stay aboard the International Space Station. Mission Control at the Kennedy Space Center in Houston will forward her ballot to the Harris County Clerk. Rubin says it's critical that we all participate in our democracy, and she considers it an honor to be able to vote from space. And that's our world for Monday, September 28th. I'm Bob Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.